doing a podcast that pertains to hockey specifically in the late weeks of August. It could be considered a stupid thing, given that there's nothing going on.
Hold on, there's almost no news. A year ago, Bob, a year ago, we were in the middle of the Stanley Cup playoffs in August.
Well, that's fine, John. That was a pandemic. Well, we're not in that now. We're still in the pandemic, which we're in a more traditional NHL schedule.
Hopefully.
Where almost nothing goes on in August. Everybody's off at the cottage or wherever they are.
Yeah.
Well, and we already did a hockey show this week, I think.
Yes, so, we did it. We had the very intelligent and erudite Eddie Olczyk on this.
That's right.
You forgot? It was yesterday.
No. That was yesterday? Really? Now you get a little older and you get a little more senile. And
okay.
The Alzheimer's rears its ugly head. We're going to talk to a target, which is a goaltender for those that may not know what a target is. And they're always the most intelligent people in the sport of hockey. And we picked a pretty good one here. You know him. He's been on Hockey Night in Canada. He is on his way to a new job in the U.S. We'll talk about that. Kevin Weeks, when we come back after these messages. And we are back. It's McCowan. It's Shannon on the program for yet another day, another 50 cents. Kevin Weeks joins us from steamy, hot Florida, but it probably isn't much steamier or hotter than it is in Toronto right now. How you doing? Everything okay?
Good morning. Yeah, no, everything's great. Hope you guys are doing well, too. Everything is good. Hope all the listeners are healthy and safe and their family and friends are doing well, too.
They're waiting for hockey season, but Kevin, I got to tell you, this is one of the shortest off seasons in the history of the game. How do you manage to decompress and get back up to speed when you start something new in the fall?
Yeah, great question. I think for us, it's about trying to get out and do the things that you want to do, see the people that you want to see as soon as possible. Because sometimes when you have that extended off season, you'll say, okay, maybe 2 weeks from now, maybe 3 weeks from now, maybe a month from now. And knowing that you have the benefit of time, but this year that hasn't been the case. So on both sides of our family, we have a Western side on Megan's side that's out in Calgary and throughout Alberta and Whitehorse. And then on my side, they're in Toronto. So she's been to both sides so far. I've only been at home to Toronto, and then hopefully I'll get a chance to get out and see her side of the family here out West and then not too distant. And then we're just spending time at our place in Miami. And as you said, it literally goes by in the blink of an eye. So between working out, getting prepped for the season and all those things and her working, it's been a lot, but it's been fun. It's been restorative, but we're trying to do it all in that shortened window for sure.
You probably don't know this. I don't think I've mentioned this to you, but, or maybe I have, but one of the times where you put your Toronto house up for sale, I actually went and looked at it, had no idea it was yours.
Oh, no way. Seriously?
Oh, seriously.
That's crazy. You're telling me this now?
Yeah, well,
you have big cake. Why are you telling me this now?
Hold on. Kevin, you weren't going to give him a discount.
No.
Hell no, he's going to jerk the price up. That was what he was going to do.
But of course, I
walked in. I had no idea it was your place, and you didn't have a lot of memorabilia or hardly anything, if I recall. There was no way to know that it was your place, and I don't remember the circumstances. Probably the agent just mentioned, well, the owner, you know, Kevin Weeks, and I went, wait a sec, hold on, really?
I can't believe you're sharing this with me now. That's crazy. It was two and a half years too long.
Yeah, well, it was a funky house. It was it was really an interesting design, and we actually seriously considered it. But and I don't remember where you were at the time, whether you were in Florida or I think you were in New York at the time.
Yeah, we're probably at our New York place because just as you guys would know in the business, rights move and life moves consequently with the TV rights moving. So yeah, we moved back down to New York and New Jersey and our old place in Bayview, just south of 401. We'd been there for 17, 18 years, but logistically it was tough to make sense and more and more sense of it. As you know, and you guys know all too well, the Toronto real estate market is one of the hottest in the world.
Oh, yeah.
So we just figured, okay, at this point, we might as well try to cash out and reposition some of that stuff back down here in the US since this is where life is now.
You mentioned new job. What do you expect ESPN to do, and what do you expect to do for ESPN?
I think as a whole, and you'd know this, both of you, based on your experience, really about amplifying the game, taking the game to the next level here to the viewing audience. And you've said this to me numerous times, a lot of the growth of the game is here in the US and internationally. And we've seen that in terms of more girls and boys. We have the Women's Worlds going on now, as you all know. And of course, the two favorites in Team Canada and Team USA continue to impress to this point in the tournament. But we've seen that growth, and we're starting to see, for example, girls' youth hockey, or minor hockey, as we say back home, youth hockey, as we say here, is on the rise. I mean, we're seeing so many more young girls and women playing the game. And then as far as the boys into men's hockey, we've seen that huge growth with USA Hockey as well on that side in terms of all the draftees that we're seeing. Geographically, we're expanding where kids are playing. And even the adult rec, which is huge too, adult recreational hockey. So this will be a huge hand in that as far as that growth from an ESPN standpoint. I want to be able to take people a little deeper inside of the game. And you'd know this from your days of producing and doing games. Take people a little bit deeper, not just the topsoil, because people have so much access to information now. So be able to take them deeper into the game, a little bit more storytelling. And not only for our hardcore hockey fan or young player, but more so for even the casual fan that's in their first foray. And then for me specifically, just continuing to serve the game. You know, I echo what Gret says, and all of us owe everything we have to this great sport, us and our families, and always wanting to serve the game, serve the player, serve the fan, the corporate partners, and just kind of be a bridge amongst all those things. And John, you know, I always call you the godfather, and you've been so grateful. I've been so grateful, rather. You've been so generous in a lot of your insights that you've shared with me over the years from when I started till now. So I just try to, I try to stay true to the game and stay true to a lot of those principles and always put the game first.
I don't know whether I call them insights or just picking up the phone and giving you shit. So.
It's all in how you receive it. It's all in how you receive it. So listen, as a former goalie, coaching is coaching. And you know that it's all in the same for me, especially when it's in the right spirit. And I know how much you care. So.
Bob, I get one quick story, Bob. Sure. So Kevin and I meet for lunch one day out in the beaches. And we're talking about it, and we're talking about the, you know, building the foundation of being a broadcaster and how you say things and be direct. And you know, it was a great time. We had a good time. I could do lunches like that for 4 or 5 hours. And, 3 or 4 days later, I'm driving down the QEW listening to All Sports Radio, and Kevin's on, and he's anything but what we talked about. He was using all these colloquial things. He was using every slang in the book. It was all just, you know, token stuff this way, token that way. So the interview finishes, and I pick up the phone in the car, and ring Kevin, and I don't even say hello. I said, "What was that?" I said, "You can't." I thought we had a meeting about this. And Kevin took it in stride and understood what I was trying to do. But that's, you know, there are simple things to make this business simple, yes. And that's what, and people sometimes don't understand that. Anyway, go ahead, Bob.
I don't have anything to add other than your boundless ego. Has resurfaced yet again.
Hold on.
Hard to be humble when you're as great as you are, Shannon. You know.
Hold on. McCowan talking to me about boundless ego. How ironic is that?
Well, you know, it's the cat, man. You know.
Let me jump in on that quickly. Let me just to keep it kind of informal. You know what? In the case of both you guys, for example, you know, Bob, I grew up listening to you. You're one of the voices. You are one of the lead voices in sports and entertainment back home for the amazing run. And you continue to be that. You're just doing it in a different format. And then, of course, you know, growing up in Hockey Night and watching Hockey Night in Canada and watching all the games and listening to Fan 590 and hyper consuming a lot of this stuff, you know, conversationally. And I've always been gifted based on my parents, just in terms of being personable and relating to people and being outgoing. But and then to Godfather's point here about the broadcasting, it was very natural, but I also had to learn a lot of the nuances and the details, because it was a new career and something that both of you worked in. And in both of your roles and have worked in so long, but in a first foray, I really wanted to improve and be as good as possible and treat this the way I treated playing and realize that this in and of itself is its own career path. And I've always wanted to respect that. So having that help along the way and still getting that help and being open to that coaching from those of you like yourselves that have been around as long as you have, it only makes you better.
I think he's calling us old, Shannon. I think that's what the essence of that was.
Experience, capital E.
Same thing. Same thing. So what do you know what your schedule is going to be like? I mean, you don't have games. So has ESPN talked to you about what kind of routine you'll be going through?
Yeah. So basically I'm kind of just at the front end of that now, trying to determine what that's going to look like. Initially in our discussions or their talks with my agent, Paul Theofanis, it was kind of laid out that I'd be doing studio and doing color for games and a combination of those and some stuff on Sports Center and different shows across ESPN, which it would be fun for me because I like that combination of doing studio and games. And one of the things I learned early from the likes of yourselves and a Shirelli Najak and also Mark Jacobson is try to be in the rink as much as possible because that's where the details are. That's where the nuance is. And I'm a natural rink rat. Anybody from back home in Toronto, since I was six, I'm always the guy that's even at the rink with my dad, even when I wasn't playing or my teams weren't playing. So I try to adopt that into the broadcasting. So all that to say, it's supposed to be a combination of all those things. We're just trying to now get a handle on what that's going to look like. And kind of once my contract with the NHL Network is finalized, then trying to dovetail both NHL Network and ESPN, because I'll be doing both as of now.
How have you managed to do what you're supposed to do when you can't get to the rink the last 2 years?
Well, again, a lot of the sage advice that I've gotten from you guys, work the phones. Yeah. Like work the phone. You can't be in the studio. My parents always say you can't be in the town and the country at the same time. So knowing that, I've always worked the phones a lot since I started broadcasting. Be in touch with trainers, equipment managers, goalie coaches, strength coaches, off-season coaches, you name it, from GMs to owners. Just getting agents, just getting as much trusted factual information as possible for the times when I'm not in the arena. And then when you're in the arena, of course, then it's more conversational, right? You see somebody, you go into one of the dressing rooms after the game, or you see somebody in the bowels of the arena or up in press row, and you can exchange information. So I always strive to be as accurate as possible, be as objective as possible, because I know that a lot of the players, their moms, dad, grandmas, siblings, aunts and uncles are watching. I'll never forget what that's like. And you always want to be fair, but be respectful. But I strive to just get as much factual information as possible.
You know, you said you used a word there early on, and the word was trust. How do you build that trust? I mean, you can be on the phone a lot with people, but they don't necessarily tell you anything. So how do you build that trust?
Well, remember you saying, you're like, well, you have an advantage. You're a former player.
Yeah, well, that's true.
And a sisterhood there. And I clearly remember you telling me that I was driving down the DVP back home. And I remember being on the phone with you and you shared that. And one thing about that is for a lot of people in the business, you know, everybody has their own style and everybody has their own tenor. But for me, I never want to burn bridges unless you absolutely have to. And in saying that, that's part of the way in which you build trust. And you guys know the majority of the stuff we know, we don't even say on any multimedia platform. Like we don't even disclose that. A lot of that we know, we have a good handle on what stays in the vault and what should stay in the vault versus what we can bring forward and discuss on any multimedia platform and do it in a way that's factual and that's fair and that's honest. And that's how you build trust. I've never burned anybody. I don't believe in doing that. And I always feel like the games are the stars, the games themselves and the players themselves are the stars. And then you get so many storylines. So you know this, you do a show, and how many shows have both of you done producing in the big truck Stanley Cup final? Bob, you've done 8,007,4200 gazillion shows that you've done. And whether you're talking the Jays or you're talking the Raptors, you've been around and you have those relationships and you see people. So you just try to use your feel and be somewhat discerning on what you choose to share and how you choose to do it.
So now you get to work with, among others, Messier and Tortorella. That'll be fun. I assume you know these guys at least a little bit, yeah, right?
I do. I played for Torts in Tampa, and then he was with us on the NHL Network. I'll share this story too. So it's probably, what are we going back now, about 4 years ago, 5 years ago? So Torts is with us on NHL Network. And, you know, we're talking and he's with us for a couple of weeks and whatever it was, maybe a couple of months. So the one evening, my spidey senses are going off. So we get there, we have our pre-show meeting. I'm not one for the pre-show meeting as such. I like to save a lot of the juice for TV and radio and podcasts and stuff. So as it turns out, we finished the meeting. It's just Torts and I in there. Like, Torts, we got to talk, man. It's like, what's up, Weesey? What do you got? I'm like, Torts, come on, man. I'm hearing you're going to Colombo. What's going on? Weesey, I don't know about that. There's no way. I don't know where you're hearing that. I don't know who told you. I don't know. I'm like, Torts, come on. I played for you. Don't BS me. Don't bullshit me. I played for you. Oh, Weeksy, I don't know what's going on. I swear to God. So that night we do the show. I get off the air. I go back home. He goes to the hotel. The next day, he's at the studio, and one of my colleagues, unnamed colleagues, is working with him the next night. So Torts is going back and forth. He's going to the restroom, and commercial breaks, he's going to the restroom. Now, of course, he's checking the phone.
Of course.
Right? Of course. Next thing you know, Torts ends up getting the job in Columbus. And I'm like, Torts, I knew it. I told you. So anyway, I'm going to have a good chuckle with him about that when we have our first ESPN meeting here soon. And then as far as Mess, I played with Mess for a bit in Vancouver and got to know him obviously really well. He was super nice to me. And then, you know, being a former Ranger and seeing him at the Garden, I've always been a big Mess fan. He's got so much experience and so much knowledge. And I think as long as Mess relaxes and he shows that other side of himself, I think he could be really good at it if he really wants to.
Well, we've had Mess on the program on numerous occasions, and it sort of goes, I don't know, John, if you were in studio with me when Messier was in at any point, but such an he's an interesting guy. There are days where he's very quiet, introverted, almost distant.
Yeah.
And then there are days where he just feels like talking. And that's obviously what ESPN wants. They want the latter, not the former.
Well, yeah, you know, exactly. More so than any other player, I think Mark Messier has diversified so much. I mean, he's got businesses everywhere. He's always looking for an opportunity. Mark's a conglomerate.
Yeah.
You know, listen, he's built a successful hotel in the Caribbean. How many commercials has he been on? He's worked on big projects in New York and other places. He's in a very interesting character beyond the hockey person that we see every day.
I totally agree. And it's kind of cool in that I love the way you just kind of, the way you crystallize that, because he has this unique Canadian roots, Western Canada roots, blended with all the stuff here in the US, New York and Caribbean, right? So I can relate to those things for obvious reasons, but what's really cool about that too with Mess is he's a very progressive guy. He's always been very progressive. And you know, what's pretty cool, guys, because you guys would know this too. I go back to watching him and then, as I said, getting a chance to play with him as a young player, but I go back to speak with the great Glenn Sather too, and Slats as we know him. And, you know, I've been fortunate to spend some time at his place out there, their place in Banff. And I remember we were there with Meg's side of the family, and we were out there a couple Christmases ago, pre-pandemic, and going through Slats's, his own Hall of Fame, if you call it that. And you're seeing all the pictures of all the Canada Cups and all the Oilers stuff and everything else, all the different Team Canada stuff. And I remember asking him, I'm like, Slats, what happened here? Tell me about this. Tell me about the Canada Cup at Cops Coliseum. Tell me about that final game. Tell me about that team. And he was just giving me a run through and centered around so much of that. Of course, is 99. Of course, the great one. But a linchpin for that was Mess as well. And I think a lot of people don't realize just the different styles of players, but also the different impact that those two have had on the game. We always talk about Gretzky and inspiration and helping to foster in the growth of the game in the Southern U.S. But for Mess going for Mess going to New York, I'm getting goosebumps talking about it now. And for Mess being the lead bull on that amazing team that ended up winning the cup final, that did so much for our sport. It really did with the Rangers.
Actually, you got me thinking about Glenn. And those two guys playing in for him in Edmonton. Can you imagine Mark Messier not being the number one center on the team?
Right.
I can tell you this story for a fact, Kevin, is that every once in a while, okay, and these are days where Wayne would have 3-minute shifts.
Right.
So Mark would lean back and look at the coach and say, "Hey, coach, when's my turn?" not in that polite manner, by the way.
I could totally see it with that Winwell helmet that he had here.
It was to know that, you know, your number one guy was Gretzky, your number two guy was Messier,
right?
Your number three guy was McTavish. So I mean, you're doing okay. It was a fascinating group of guys to be around, just like the Ranger teams you were around.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And so many of the best players, including them, and personalities. And you know, for somebody like Slats, like Glenn, with all that he's accomplished. And one thing I'll say about Glenn too, which is kind of a bigger picture, is he was a forefather in a lot of ways in terms of just wanting the best players and the best people in the organization, right? You go back, Edmonton's teams were always diverse. They're still diverse now, but he started that footprint at that time. You know, he had, be it Jari Kurri, be it Esa Tiikkanen, Peter Klima from Czech Republic. I mean, you could Grant Fuhrer, you can go up and down the list. He had French Canadian players, Western Canadian players, Swedes, Russians.
You could be from Mars. If you could score goals, you could be from Mars playing for Glenn Sather.
100%. Polky Reddick, Joaquin Gage, Freddie Brathwaite. I mean, you can go up and down the list. So I've always respected that about him too. And naturally you see that with what he's done in New York, but going back to the days long before that was in vogue, so to speak, that's the way the Oilers were built. And I have a ton of respect for him for doing that and being that open-minded.
We're with Kevin Weeks. We're going to take a quick break and come back with more back after these messages. Bob McCowan, John Shannon, and former target Kevin Weeks is with. And speaking of targets, here's a question I don't think I've ever asked. Asked a lot of them. So I became a goaltender when I started playing hockey, and the reason was simple.
His idol was George Vezina.
Yeah. Sick. George Vezina was,
sick.
Well, he was my backup anyway. So, you know, I'm like 6 years old or whatever. And our team couldn't win an inter squad game.
Sure.
And so they rotated the goalies. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a bunch of kids don't know how to skate, don't know how to do anything. And I get my turn in goal, and I guess I was pretty good or better than the other dumb six-year-olds. And so they kept me there. And so now I'm a goaltender.
Yeah.
But, like, you play hockey wherever it is, 90% of the players are going to be forwards or defensemen. They're going to be skaters. And that 10% at most are goaltenders. What did you start when you were a kid playing out, and then – how did you get to be a goaltender, or did you always want to be?
Good question. Really what happened was playing street hockey with my older cousin, Ian, and his friends. Some of those guys, he's born 68. Some of them are 67, 6, 5, 70, and I'm born in 75. So
you're a lot younger.
I'm a ton younger than these guys, and I'm literally a ball chaser. Like when the ball goes into the bushes behind our building,
Kevin, go get it.
Fence, go get it. Like, or go into the chain link fence, go get it. It went down the laneway behind our building off Christie Street at the time. Go get it. So I took that seriously. And for me, I just wanted to fit in with my older cousin and his friends. And we had this cool mix of kids who everybody's parents were, you know, from Newfoundland, Ireland, Russia, Scotland, Italy, Caribbean, you name it, just off of St. Clair and Christie in that pocket in the 70s. Mm-hmm. So basically I was the ball chaser really. And we had the one goalie whose parents had emigrated from Greece, Lambros. I'll never forget his last name. And they called him Lambros, and he would always be one of the goalies and the other one would rotate. For whatever reason, Lambros's parents, I don't know if it was serendipitous, they ended up moving back to Greece. So they didn't really have anybody that really wanted to play net. Of course, now they're like, okay, Kev, if you want to go in, and I'm 6 years old. So, you know, these kids are 12, 11, 13, 14, and they're really peppering you with the street hockey ball. You can't even move. You got sponge pads from the garbage from a sofa that's been thrown out, right?
Yeah.
So we cut the sponge, you know this. And the pads are like up to my waist and I'm spun around. And just, it's just kind of a comedy of errors, really, but the way everything lined up. And then we go to Hillcrest Park, just a bit south of us. And they would have the outdoor rink beside the tennis courts. And I'm out there in winter boots with them. And then everybody goes up to St. Mike's Arena, to the world famous St. Mike's Arena. And they sign up to play house league, Toronto Olympics house league. So once my aunt and uncle let my cousin do it, I go home and we lived in the same building at the time. And I go to my parents. I'm like, hey, Ian's playing. He's playing hockey. Mom and dad, can you sign me up? Can you sign me up? And I begged them to sign me up. It was $65 for registration at the time. And from there, I just, that's what I knew I wanted to do. Like Miss Maher was our teacher at McMurrick Public School. Pardon me. Excuse me. And in grade 1/1st grade, I had a book, you know, the first book that you kind of write. And I had myself drawn as a goalie with a scoreboard with the NHL shield with a logo in it. And that's really what was like my compass, my North Star. Everything in my life then was about making the NHL and being an NHL goalie. And I was very fortunate that I had that goal that was crystal clear from that young of an age. But it's a unique position, man. I mean, Godfather, your son played, and Bobcat, you played too, as you're saying. It's a real unique, demanding position. And you put so much on yourself in terms of just expectations and wanting to deliver for your teammates and wanting to perform at a high level. It's all consuming position for sure. No question.
Ever get cut?
Only time I got cut, I guess if you will say, was from what would have been the under 17 team Ontario.
Wow.
Under 17. So we had this, we had our team Ontario camp was in the final camp was in Cornwall. And I had an awesome camp. I felt great that camp. And what was ironic is we had Chad Lang, who played in Peterborough, went as an underage goalie. We have my man, Jamie Storr, who went as an underage goalie to Owen Sound, ironically, in which I then the next year end up getting drafted by Owen Sound. And then we had Jeff Silyeko, who's currently the goalie coach for the Red Wings, Detroit, who was in the camp as well. A few others, but those were maybe our most notable ones. And I felt awesome in this camp. Everything was what I hoped it would have been. And I remember getting home and seeing this letter and expecting that I'm going to be on Team Ontario playing in the Canada Games and the whole thing. And it didn't happen. Thank you so much for participating. And I was so gutted at the time, but I was like, okay, I'm going to effing show them. Okay. And then we went up to Sudbury for the big nickel tournament. We won the tournament. I was goalie of the tournament. And then that was kind of like the first real adversity, if you will, or huge setback. As a young player, you have these aspirations and you want to continue accomplishing these things. And that's the first time that that had happened to me at that point. So it was an eye-opening thing. And then after that, also to expand on the question, you know, going to training camps in the NHL, you're a young goalie, especially in those days, you're not getting a sniff. You're not getting a chance. Like, it's not happening. You know, I was drafted by the Florida Panthers. I'll always be indebted and grateful to them for developing me. But we had John Van Beesbrouck at the time. They had Mark Fitzpatrick at the time. That was the best tandem or the best duo. And there was just no chance. Like, I literally had to stand on my head and practice, come on extra, do all the things. And I knew for that first 3 or 4 training camps that there was no chance that I was going to make it. I was getting sent back to the minor, junior, and then the minors. So that was humbling. But as I said, it keeps you hungry. It keeps you hungry. It kept me hungry in the gym. It kept me hungry on the ice. And, you know, when you're in the minors or junior, going up and down I-95 and I-80 and all these different highways, you're going to play in Hershey. I played in the A. I played in the I. It kept me hungry for sure to get there.
Did you played for, I want to say, 5 or 6 teams in the NHL?
Yeah, technically 7, yeah.
Okay. Do you view yourself as a member of one particular team? Would you call yourself a Kane? Would you call yourself a Ranger? What would you call yourself?
I call myself probably a hybrid. but I probably just
because. So if you were going, if you had to go to the Hall of Fame and they said you had to put a jersey on, which one would you put on?
I'd put on the Canes one. And the reason I put that on is just it was a special group. And we ended up going to that cup final in 2002. And what was really cool about that is we had great players. Obviously, Ronnie Francis, Hall of Famer, one of the best to play, who's now the GM of Seattle. Roddy Brind'Amour, one of my favorites to this day, who is a walking, living, breathing example of high performance and commitment, as he was as a player. So you see him now as a coach, winning the Jack Adams this year and helping transform that organization in Carolina. Among others, Brett Hedekin. I could go down the name of players, Glenn Wesley, Sean Hill, Artie Irby, my goalie partner. But the best part about that, guys, is that team's success, much like it is now, was founded on old school principles. Mm-hmm. You hear your parents talk, you hear grandparents, you hear older uncles and aunts, and people talk to your grandmas about work ethic and how work ethic is so important and doing the little things right. That team was a collection of that. And I literally knew from when I first got traded there from Tampa, my first practice, I'm like, oh my Lord, like everybody's in shape. Everybody's doing all the little details. The practice tempo was so much higher. The attention to detail at that time was higher than Tampa because so many of us were young in Tampa. And it was a special time. So if I had to say, I would probably say that. I would probably say the Canes just based on us going to a Stanley Cup final in 02.
It is intriguing that the most intelligent hockey players are goaltenders. There's no question about it.
Take your time with that.
And I don't know whether...
What was this about? What was this about ego earlier in the show? What was this about?
Yeah, well, we're all members of the goalie union.
Well, exactly. I mean, your kid is obviously a smart kid, in spite of the fact that he was encumbered with the genes that you provided.
But thank goodness my wife was brilliant.
Well, take a look at the broadcasters in the business and historically, and there's just no question that goaltenders are at the top of the list, especially when you understand only 10% of all hockey players are goaltenders.
True.
You know, Healy was on with us recently. Davidson's a regular with us, and he was a great broadcaster. Millen.
Famer.
You know, down the list you go, right?
Totally. Well, here's the thing. I can only see it through my eyes, but I try to be as objective as possible. And you guys would know this. When you play the position, you have to literally account for everything. And you have to get this calculation and make this calculation as everything is coming toward you. So most girls and boys and people that play the position starting then at a young age, you're learning to literally dissect and read, dissect, compute, and then react. And 95% of the game is played in front of you when you're a goalie. Mm-hmm. You know, it's only 5% behind the goal line. Gretz will probably tell you differently because he established
that. Well, he'd like to have about 80% of it behind the goal line.
Exactly, which was brilliant. Because it causes so much confusion. But nonetheless, about 95% of it's played in front of you, right? So you're always calculating what's going on and you have to account for so many details and nuances and scenarios. So I think naturally just that alone, much like being a quarterback in football, I think that helps lend itself to goalies being deeper in terms of their ability to analyze and read and react what's happening in front of them and around them. And it's all about nuances. Like, think about this, okay? So as I sit here, if I take this shoulder for an example, if this shoulder is where it is, that's a goal. If this shoulder is like 2 degrees forward, that's probably a save. Like that's the margins, right? Like fraction of a second, literally fraction of an inch or a centimeter. That's the margins. And we live and die with that.
That sounds like Benny Allaire to me. I don't know.
Exactly. No, exactly. Totally. Go ahead.
So Benoit Allaire is the Rangers goalie guru. He's absolutely fantastic. And one of his great proteges was a man who just retired, Henrik Lundqvist. Yeah. You got to play with the King. What was it like to play with Henrik Lundqvist? What'd you learn from him?
Honestly, guys, I came out, pardon me, so 03, 04 would have been my platform year, my career best season. We didn't make the playoffs in Carolina that year, but I played 66, 67 games, six, whatever shutouts. Individually, I had a really good year, which sucked because our team didn't perform after going to Stanley Cup final. This is the following year. We had this huge drop off. And then of course the work stoppage takes place and I'm expecting, okay, based on that year that I had, I'm going to get this contract 5 years. I'll get the Nabokov, you know, I'm looking at your comparables. And then, as you guys know all too well, because you're at the heart of a lot of these negotiations with the CBA between the league and the PA. And believe me, I listened to you. every day during that because I was at home every day between going to PA meetings at the Harbor Castle, driving back home, being at home, just trying to see what I can hear. And one of the things that I heard from Mike Johnson, Johnny said to me, he's like, Weeksy, I'm playing over in Sweden. This goalie's incredible. I'm like, who do you mean? Jose Theodore? He's like, no. This Lundqvist guy's incredible, man. I'm telling you. Jose's over there. He's a league MVP 2 years ago. He's like, Weeksy, this guy's unbelievable. He's like, I know you signed with the Rangers. I'm just giving you a heads up. This guy's unbelievable. So next thing you know, they go on for Lunda. Henrik played in for Lunda. Johnny played over there during the work stoppage. I didn't play because some of us were afraid to play. You don't want to get blackballed. So I'm skating literally with Sudsy, my goalie coach, who's Anaheim's goalie coach. We're skating at Center Ice Arena back home at Pharmacy and McNichol. And finally, the year gets canceled. And I come to training camp the next year. I'm nowhere near the same goalie I was in that platform year. I hadn't played in a whole year. And even that aside, even if I was playing at that level, this guy from the first day in training camp, I'm like, oh no, this looks real different. Like just looking at him. Remember when Felix came up and you looked at Felix, his stance was different. He held his glove differently. Sure. He just looked different to the eye. That was Henrik. And on the ice, he looked different. Off the ice, he looked different. Like this is a different force. And literally I was supposed to be the starter. I played our first few games. And regardless as to what would have happened had I kept playing, this guy was taking this crease over by storm. And that's exactly what happened. He got in. He absolutely nailed it. The fans went bananas. Rager fans were starving for a next version of Ricky, of Mike Richter. And understandably so. And Henrik knocked it out of the freaking park. And I remember he got a game star and he went and he was clapping like with a stick and clapping. And so like kind of European soccer, European football. And guys, it was transformational. He took over the garden. He took over the crease. He took over the position. He took over the New York and he took over the league. Mm-hmm. And I haven't seen very many, if any, goalies do that ever. And he was just different. And he was wired a certain way. He looked like Rod Stewart. He wore skinny suits. He had the skinny tie. He was super fashionable. And we just really developed this relationship. And I just said to myself, look, I still want to be a valuable member of this team. Let me strive to be the best backup goalie in the league. And when I get in the net, try to play like a starter and give the team the best chance to win and try to support him as a young goalie. And that's the way I approached it. So I'll tell you this too, for a lot of the listeners, because I know they skew in different kind of ages, but I talked about work ethic earlier. Everybody looks at Henrik and they look at his suits. They look at the cars. They look at everything him and Benoit Laire have accomplished in their career was all based on work ethic. Mm-hmm. And when I tell you everything, I mean everything. And long after he got the contracts, long after he had the adulation and the standing O's at the garden, he'd be at the practice rink early. They'd be on the ice early together and they do it and they do it and they do it day in, day out, day in, day out. And you know, I'm proud to call him a friend and a close friend. And I'm really proud of everything he's done. Hall of Famer next up.
No, there's no better juxtaposition of Henrik Lundqvist wearing his goalie equipment and Henrik Lundqvist out on the town.
Exactly.
This guy was, in my opinion, he was built for New York.
Totally.
Built for New York. I mean,
big time.
God, was there some of us just dream?
Yes.
That looked like Henrik Lundqvist off for 3 minutes.
Yeah, it dripped off him. And it still does. Like, that's funny you say that. And what's crazy about that is with those level of performers, and we talked about Mess and Gretz and Ronnie Francis and some of these other amazing, you know, Hall of Famers and best to ever do it. And I was so privileged to play with a lot of them. And Henrik being one of them, because he's a surefire guy, as is Luongo, who I played with early in his career. And I got to tell you something, man. With Henrik specifically, last year, I didn't even know he was having heart surgery. This is something for the listeners. I knew that he was going through a rough patch with the heart. I didn't know he had open heart surgery. Guys, I'm going to tell you this now. This is about 42 days after him getting open heart surgery. So I'm texting him like, King, how are you doing? King, how are you feeling? Let me know if you need anything. What can I do? What can I give? I literally went online. Eataly, I love Eataly. Eataly grocery store, high-end Italian grocery store in New York. They're around the world. So I go on Ely's website, I order a bunch of stuff for him and Therese and the kids, get it sent to the house as a gift for him getting back home and them getting back home as they would have been at Cleveland Clinic for the surgery. I didn't even know the extent of the surgery. 42 days post-op, I see this fool, and I say that lovingly, I see him post this video on Instagram about him on the ice in goalie game.
Yeah.
Off of open heart surgery.
Yeah.
So honest to God, I start ringing his, I'm like ring his line on his cell, ring and ring and ring. Finally, he ends up, he's like, hey, Weeksy Cat, what's up, buddy? What's going on, brother? What's up? I'm like, me? What the hell? Did you just have surgery? What the frick are you doing on the ice? He's like, oh, I just got to see where I'm at. I just got to get a feel. I want to get the feeling, see where I'm at. I'm like, see where you're at? You had open heart surgery. I swear to God. I go, where are you skating here in Metro New York? Where? So he tells me the location. It's a private rink. He tells me the location that he's skating at. I said, I'm coming there. He goes, you're coming? I go, I'm coming. So literally before I leave our house in Jersey, he calls me back. He's like, hey, man, do you have your skates and stick? I'm like, oh, Lord. Okay, yeah, I've got them. So now I bring my goalie skates. I bring some player gloves, a tracksuit. I get to this undisclosed rink, this private rink in Metro New York. I can't give too much away. I get to the rink. He comes to the door. He comes straddling up to this private entrance. He's like, Weeksy Cat, what's up? I'm like, King, what's going on? He's like, yeah, I'm skating. Yeah, come on. I only have one shooter, so I need you. I need you here with me today. I need you to come on the ice. I'm like, oh, my Lord. Anyway, I go on the ice, guys. He looks the exact same. He looks like the King. The same Hall of Fame technique, edge control, pushes, timing, everything. So he's wearing his heart rate monitor because he's only able to get his heart rate up to a certain level. And I'm telling you right now, for all the big moments that I had playing with him and watching him deliver, for all the games as a broadcaster analyst and going in the garden and standing in the corner and watching him stand on his head, nothing was more impressive to me than what I saw from him coming out of heart surgery.
That
and that really, in essence, is part of what makes him great, really.
We have other things that we want to talk to you about, including the NHL's diversity program, but we're tight on time. So let's do this again and not in the not too distant future if you're okay with it.
We'll do it next week if you want. I'm around. You're paying though. That patio that you said you're at yesterday. I don't know where you were, but you're paying for that Bobcat. That'll be on you for this next one.
There you go.
Listen, thanks, pal. Great stories. Great talking to you. Nice to see you and continued good health. Be safe down there in Florida. You know, all those Republicans not getting their shots.
Thank you. Thanks so much, guys. Appreciate having you on. Stay healthy and safe. I'm happy to jump on. Godfather just messaged me. We could do it next week if you want. Just let me know.
Cheers. We'll talk.
All right. Thanks, pal. Guys. Thank you.
Kevin Weeks, back to wrap it after these messages. McCown and Shannon back with you, and our thanks again to Kevin Weeks for joining us on the program. He's a good storyteller.
He sure is. And he found the right stage to continue his career within the NHL. He's done some really good things. You touched on it about he's got a big role in diversity in the National Hockey League. He's trying hard, I think everybody agrees that the more inclusive the game can be, the better off the game will be.
Well, I didn't want to shortchange him. And no. I know that can be a rather lengthy conversation, and we'll do that. And in the not too distant future, we'll have Kevin back with us. We'll turn to baseball tomorrow, we think.
Yes, absolutely.
And
because I know you need baseball, Bob.
Well, we only have a couple of months left of the baseball season, if you include the playoffs and the World Series. You know, we're getting down to the nitty-gritty. So we'll address that tomorrow to close out the week. And for those that are not aware, the following week, if you are a regular subscriber to the podcast, our esteemed producer, Hugh McLarty, will be sending out some best ofs as we take our first week off ever after a year of doing this.
It's only a year, Bob?
only a year of doing this. It's more than a year being together. And Lord knows I remember every bleeping day.
You don't remember yesterday.
Who was on yesterday?
That's right.
For John Shannon, Bob McCowan, have yourselves a nice day, and we'll see you tomorrow. Goodbye, everybody.